As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Getting closer and closer to episode 950, but this is 946 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined by the other host, Brittany Page.
So we are just going to jump into it today, I think, other than for me to say we get a lot of messages, especially lately with the political climate, of people asking, you know, I'm worried about you guys separate and apart from our safety. Like, they're worried about our platform. They're worried about censorship.
Yeah.
And people will say, you know, how can we help? And the biggest way that you can help is by liking, sharing, commenting, interacting with the stuff that we put out.
Yeah.
The stuff that any progressive commentator that you like and appreciate puts out. So
yeah. I think that's a great addition, is Signal Boost. Not just, I mean, obviously us, that helps us a lot. But if we're talking about the movement in general, Signal Boost all of it.
Yeah. And like, for example, there was that white woman who called that child the N-word on a playground recently. And yeah, like Matt Walsh did a lengthy segment defending her and the raising of money for her. And I had this thought where I was like, okay, I hate this man.
Yeah.
I'm enraged that he did this. Thought about posting about it, but then I thought it through and I'm like, all that will do is
signal boost that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so think about it this way. If you are commenting on and arguing with people on conservative media, on conservative posts, all you're doing is boosting that in the algorithm. So I don't think you're changing hearts and minds if you're like in Matt Walsh's comment section.
Yeah, if you want to argue with those dicks, do it on progressive media.
Yeah, because that boosts the algorithm. And we are, all of us, at the mercy of these social media algorithms. So this is important. If you are still on Facebook, liking the I Doubt It Facebook page posts, sharing those posts, sharing our YouTube videos, downloading the podcast, listening to it, all of those things really help expand our reach and help us show up for other people in the algorithm. And we believe in what we're doing here. So we want people to see what we're doing. We want people to see it. And we have to break through that algorithm in order to do that.
Yeah.
And another thing, one thing that we want to do that kind of sets us apart, I guess, I don't know, is we regularly do these calls to action where we focus on actual things you can be doing to help you feel better, number one, but also number two, make a difference in this current political climate. And so we talk about organizations like Five Calls a lot that help make it easy to contact your elected officials by
fivecalls.org.
Yeah, by putting in your zip code, and then it literally gives you scripts that you can read when you make your phone call. So this is important because right now we're seeing headlines that Trump is floating the possibility that he supports increasing taxes on the wealthy right now. And I know what you're thinking, because I'm thinking the same thing. We'll see. Or alternatively, yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Because the entire budget negotiations right now are about extending his 2017 Trump tax cuts, which disproportionately benefit the wealthy and corporations. And they cost a lot of money extending those tax cuts for the wealthy. But they're realizing now they've made too many promises, right? They've said, we're not going to increase the deficit. We're not going to cut Medicaid.
Right.
We are
And we're going to give this wild tax increase to billionaires and uber wealthy people.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're not going to raise the debt limit.
Yeah,
so like
they've
made all these promises that don't fit together. And so they need to make a choice. And what's happening is the activism that we're seeing, the organizing that we're seeing, informing people that the Republican plan is to pay for these tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations by cutting Medicaid, by cutting SNAP. And people have gotten in the streets. They're making these phone calls. They're fighting back. That's why I believe we're seeing some fear from Republicans who are afraid to now make these cuts, and why we're seeing headlines about Trump now saying that he's floating these tax cuts. Pick up the phone, call your elected officials. I'm going to link to the five calls script specifically about Medicaid and the Republican budget. I know AOC just did a call to action on her Instagram the other day. So this is really important, and we want to make sure that you do that. Now, following up from the previous episode, we have some listener communication, particularly surrounding the brief conversation that we had about people using the word deportation.
Yeah.
And so we actually got a lot of listener communication about this. What is the proper word when we're talking about the government disappearing people to other countries when they are citizens? Or in the case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia, which I think we were specifically talking about, I'm not quite sure, a permanent resident. So what is the proper term to use in that case? Because
He's not here illegally. He wasn't an illegal.
Right. And so the question is, what's the right term? This first voicemail is from, I believe it's Beck. That's what I heard. Beck in Atlanta.
Hey, just named Brittany. I'm in the, this is Beck from Atlanta. I'm in the middle of listening to episode 945. I just wanted to comment on the conversation around using the word deported, because from my understanding over recent discord, the hesitancy to use the word is less about the direct definition and more about the implication of due process. Because whether it's been undocumented people sent to death camps or legal citizens being forced to leave the country, the use of the word deportation implies due process, which does not exist in these cases. So, I mean, like, if you want to say deportation without due process, whatever, I think people are making it important because they just want to remind everybody that there's no representation here. There's no, you know, people are not being given a chance to stake their claim or speak to a lawyer or what have you. They are just being sent away. That was it. You know, I just thought that that was an interesting point of discussion. And love what you guys do. Keep up the great work. BP is the best part. Bye.
Love the show. Brittany's the best part.
Did you say Sweepy or BP?
I think it's Sweepy.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Sweepy's getting some credit today. So I was surprised by how much listener communication we got about this specific issue. So I think we'll just kind of play the next voicemail as well and then talk about everything at the end here. So this one is on the same issue, but this is Tony in Boston.
Hi, Jesse and Brittany. It's Tony from Boston. Long time no chat. So I've just listened to the most recent episode regarding what was labeled as deportation of American citizens. Deportation is a legal process that involves due process. What they are doing is, Brittany was right, kidnapping technically, but also the technical term is extraordinary rendition, or they are being renditioned to foreign countries or their alleged country of origin, or to El Salvador, or whatever. So extraordinary rendition or renditioned. Thank you. Have a great day. Bye.
Yeah, so my problem with all of this is the fact that I'm talking about what specific words we use and the language we use is nobody knows what the fuck rendition is. That if I say rendition, your average person who's watching a YouTube video isn't going to be have a fulsome understanding of what that means. I understand when people are saying that. See, the conversation we had was about using the word deportation relative to American citizens. Now it's like, well, none of this is deportation, even whether you're considered undocumented or a legal permanent resident or you have a student visa. If you're not afforded due process, then it's not deportation. I get that. The reason I was using deportation and may, you know, in and out, fade, transition from using it back and forth, still is it is a you cannot be deported as an American citizen. So the reason I'm using deported is because it's so antithetical to how anything works at all that it's a like a, oh shit, what do you mean deporting Americans? That's not a thing. Mm-hmm. That's why I was using it.
Yeah.
But I understand the arguments. I get it.
Yeah, and there were other suggestions. We got a comment on Patreon from Thomas M. who said, wouldn't exiled be the correct term? So sure. Again, I think there's, people are getting it.
Yeah, I like disappeared a lot. Kidnapped is another, it's good, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's different ways to describe it, but I think...
Sweepy is not the best part right now, I'll tell you that. That is a chewy, chewy fart that just rose into my nostrils from under the desk. Yikes, Sweep!
I thought you were making a comment
good
that she's...
Good Lord!
She's not at all contributing to the conversation.
That is just assault.
Yeah, it's the worst when they're chewy and thick. So... Yeah, okay, well...
It's so heavy. How does it not just, like, just float along the level at the floor like a mist in a Scooby-Doo episode, you know?
Yeah.
Like, how does it actually get aloft and into my nose from under the desk?
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much for contributing to that conversation. What I'm happy about is that people are getting the severity of the current situation that we are in and actually that has gotten worse in recent days.
Absolutely.
So, we are going to obviously get into some of that. But first, we want to thank our newest Patreon supporters. So thank you very much to Olive O.
Olive O.
Onel C.
Onel C.
And again, if I'm saying your name wrong, please let us know. Tiaria G.
Tiaria G.
Elena R.
Elena R.
Stephen R.
Stephen R.
John D. W.
John D. W.
Paul.
Paul.
Andy P.
Andy P.
James M.
James M.
True Purple.
True Purple.
Allison K.
Allison K.
Joyce K.
Joyce K.
C. W. G.
C. W. G.
Thomas T.
Thomas T.
Mike.
Mike.
Jerry A.
Jerry A.
And then we would like to give a special shout out to our Patreon supporters who have increased the pledges. And that would be Crow.
Crow!
And Sunny L.
Sunny L, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you. If you would like to join all of these individuals, please go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. We appreciate your support. And we look forward to going through the headlines with you.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Stalemocracy. Facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So we've already reached the arresting political opponents part of the Donald Trump administration, and this happened on Friday with Newark Mayor Ross Baraka, a Democrat, being arrested and charged with trespassing after he was visiting the facility to inspect it, as is his purview as the mayor of Newark. And this is a private ICE detention facility.
Yeah, privately owned and operated. This isn't a federal government facility that can skirt construction rules from the state and municipal governments.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of controversy over this specific detention facility called Delaney Hall. And that's because a lot of activists have said that basically transforming this former prison into an ICE detention facility, violates laws, violates state laws, and is offensive and damaging to immigrant communities.
Yeah.
And there was also reporting from about a month ago that there was actually a stop work order at this same private ICE detention center because they failed to give city officials access to conduct inspections.
Yeah, back in March, they were talking about this. This is not new news. This isn't something that they're just trying to create after the fact. This has been at issue with the mayor of Newark, New Jersey. And then when he went to follow up, he got arrested.
Yeah, and so there's all kinds of problems with this. The Trump administration is now saying that they are actually going to make more arrests of Democratic lawmakers because they, quote unquote, body slammed ICE officials. And again, if you look at these New Jersey elected official or congresspeople, I don't want to, you know, offend anyone, but they don't seem like body slamming types to me.
No.
I don't know. It's like they're not doing any choke slams of ICE.
One is for sure in her mid to late 60s.
Yeah.
Just a little old black lady. You know what I mean?
Well, also they released the body cam footage. I didn't see any body slamming going on. What I saw is typical of what we see on body camera footage, which is armed agents of the state escalating rather than de-escalating a situation and going hands-on and being very aggressive and pushing yeah. people. So,
by the way, I said little old black lady intentionally because Michael McCall today on one of the Sunday shows said that the three elected officials who were there were committing gang violence against Homeland Security.
Oh, my God.
Invoking that when it's one black mayor of Newark got arrested.
Wow.
Two other congresswomen were there who were both black as well.
Wow.
And he calls it gang violence against our federal law enforcement. Ugh.
Yeah.
Just fucking racist garbage.
Yeah. So after the Newark mayor was released from custody, he gave an interview with Caitlin Collins where he responded to Alina Haba, who is Trump's, what is her role now?
U.S. attorney.
U.S.
for
attorney.
The district in New Jersey, which, by the way, isn't the role of a U.S. attorney to be, while a case is being adjudicated, they always say, well, we can't comment. I guess unless it's your role is just propaganda, then you can fucking run your mouth.
Right. So the Trump administration's claim is that the people who were committing, quote unquote, gang violence didn't happen, that they were given multiple warnings to leave. And this was the Newark mayor's response to that claim.
Alina Haba, who, just for people who may not be familiar, she's President Trump's former attorney. She is now the interim U.S. attorney in New Jersey, in your state. The way she puts what happened today is she is accusing you of ignoring multiple warnings from Homeland Security investigations to remove yourself and says that you chose to, quote, disregard the law. Is that true? Had there been warnings? What had happened?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, we could. The reality is Alina Haba wasn't there. The U.S. attorney wasn't there. She doesn't know what happened. Clearly, that is not the context of what happened. I was there for over an hour in that space, and nobody ever told me to move. I was in there for over an hour. Not a single person, not an officer from ICE, not any of the security guards. Nobody told me to leave that place. Somebody from Homeland Security came in the end and began to escalate the situation, and we wound up being where we are today. And that's, frankly, the extent of it. I didn't go there to break any laws. I didn't break any laws. I was there as the mayor of the city, exercising my right and duty as an elected official, supporting our congresspeople, preparing for a press conference that was supposed to happen there. I did not into that place unlawfully. I did not break any laws. And so all of that is incorrect. So she was not there. So she should get some better information.
You know, furthermore, I think it's interesting to point out that a tour was given of the facility after the arrest was done.
Right.
So it wasn't like, oh, you got to get out of here. They did this for the propaganda of it. And then once the arrest was done, then, oh, yeah, okay, come on in. We'll give you a tour.
Right.
Just, It's all for the cameras.
Right. And it's very typical what we're seeing, that there is body camera footage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And still they're trying to lie about what happened, just like we see with every other instance of body camera footage from the police.
I just recorded a video for tomorrow that is Trisha McLaughlin, who is like the undersecretary for public relations or some nonsense for Homeland Security, who went on CNN with Dana Bash and said that these congresswomen body slammed a Homeland Security official. And by the way, we've got body cam footage of it. We've got video of them body slamming. And then they released, ICE released, or Homeland Security released 26 seconds of wildly edited video. But guess what? There's no body slam at all.
Yeah, you know how there's no body slam? It would be the body slam heard around the world. It would be on replay on every single government Twitter account right now.
And
it would be everywhere. You'd be seeing the body slam constantly if there was a body slam.
It's also so comically edited, the 26 seconds. And by the way, the clip that that's out there is like a minute and 30 seconds of unedited footage of the melee, the chaos from Homeland Security. But the 26-second edited footage, it's like they slow it down at just the right moment to try to make it look weird, and it's like... It's so fucking terrible. Just ridiculous.
Yeah, so again, let's hear another perspective on this that was from the mayor. Let's hear from New Jersey Congresswoman LaMonica McIver on what happened during this situation.
What all of you watch occurred is just how reckless ICE is. It is unacceptable that me as a member of Congress, as a black woman here in this city, was just assaulted by multiple ICE officers while regional directors of ICE watched it happen. Since we toured the whole facility with them, no one offered an apology or said anything to me about what occurred out here. Not only was I assaulted, but Congressman Bonnie Watson was assaulted, and of course, Congressman Rob Menendez was roughed up as he was trying to protect us. It makes no sense, and it is highly unacceptable how this administration is trying to restrict Congress from doing their bare duties and the responsibilities that the people have elected us to do.
This is just another reminder, I think, that everybody needs to sit back, take a deep breath, and really remember and have it drilled in. You cannot trust this Trump government.
Mm-hmm.
From FDA to Homeland Security to Energy Department to FBI to DOJ, from Donald Trump himself on down, it's rotted from the head. You can't fucking trust them.
Yeah. I've been getting calls from the CDC randomly, like almost every day. I'm like, am I put on a list now because I've been shitting on RFK Jr.?
I don't know. You answered one, and it was like they want to take a survey or something.
Yeah, like, I'm not giving you any information.
Of course.
I can't trust you now.
Crazy.
Like, I'm sad about it, but I'm afraid. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So along this same theme of the escalating authoritarian takeover of the Trump administration.
Are we going to get to habeas corpus?
We are going to get to habeas corpus, of course.
I mean, what the fuck is going on?
But along the same topic here of Donald Trump sending out his armed agents of the state to disappear people for, you know, writing op-eds or whatever it may be in ISIS terrorizing cities across the country. They were here in D.C. all week last week, terrorizing the city. And last week, Senator Chris Murphy had an opportunity to question the now Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem. And there was a remarkable moment where he was asking her specifically whether or not she thinks that you can detain and deport a legal permanent resident for expressing a political opinion that the Trump administration disagrees with. That was the question. And the fact that this exchange goes on for such a lengthy period of time, you would think that it's an easy response. You would hope that it's an easy response. It's apparently not.
Do you believe that you have the right to detain or deport a legal permanent resident for expressing their political opinion?
I don't make decisions on legal status here in the United States. The Department of State does that. And I would say that as they've gone through an evaluation of who gets a visa, who gets legal status, green cards, they've been evaluating and discussing how that applies.
Well, I acknowledge you don't make, but if someone is a legal permanent resident of the United States, I'm not talking about an H-1B mm-hmm. or a student visa holder. I'm talking about a legal permanent resident. If you are a legal permanent resident, do you have the right to detain or deport that person simply for expressing their political opinion?
The Department of State makes those decisions.
No, the Department of Homeland Security. You make that decision about who you have the right to detain or deport. So do you, you are involved in that? Do you believe the United States, do you believe the law allows?
The Department of Homeland Security under the Trump administration is enforcing the law, following the constitutional rights of folks who are here as citizens, those who are here legally, and those who are here illegally.
So a legal permanent resident is by definition here legally. Do you believe, I mean, I think this is really troubling if mm-hmm. you can't answer this simple question. Do you believe that the U.S. government can detain and deport a legal permanent resident for expressing a political opinion that the that the administration disagrees with?
The determination you're asking for is based on things that you are determining that the Secretary of State has considered and evaluated. We don't evaluate that, the administration, along with the partnership with the Department of State, on what is political speech and what's an affiliation with a foreign
terrorist. Do you believe?
That's the difference between the two that you're asking. Do you believe that you can detain and deport a legal permanent resident
for expressing a political opinion?
We have not detained or deported anybody who's a legal permanent resident or citizen of the United States.
Then say you don't have the ability to do that.
We have
clarify that for the millions of...
That is exactly what I'm doing, is that we have followed exactly what the law is, and that we have not detained or deported anybody who's a citizen or has legal status in this country. We are focused on the worst of the worst dangerous criminals.
You do not believe you have the ability to do that.
We have not done that at all, and the Trump administration has no plan.
Well, just because you haven't done it doesn't mean that you won't do it in the future. Do you believe you have the ability to do that? I think you are going to do the exact appropriate thing in partnership
with the Department of State and in partnership with the Trump administration.
It is the dumbest shell game of responsibility you've ever heard. Because if you go to Marco Rubio, he's going to say, oh, you're going to have to talk to Homeland Security about that.
Right, right.
But when you talk to Homeland Security, oh, you're going to have to talk to the Department of State about that. If you go to the administration and talk to Caroline Leavitt in the press brief, they're going to say, oh, go talk to the DOJ, go talk to Homeland Security, go talk to the Department of State. It's a shell game of duncery.
Well, and all it does is tell you what the Trump administration's official position on this question is.
Also,
because her refusal to answer
says everything, is
fear of what will happen if she actually answers the question in a way that the Trump administration doesn't like.
Yeah. The other thing is, this is another example of Democrats being too kind.
He needs
to be, madam, enough. I reclaim my time. Enough. You're not going to fucking filibuster here.
Yeah.
Instead, he lets her ramble and blather on with her lies and propaganda.
Yeah, I cannot tell you how frustrating it was for me. I've been watching several of these hearings over the past week, and we need to do away with it. The thank you so much for being here. Don't start your questioning with thank you so much for being here when you're dealing with someone who refuses to be honest, who's going to lie continuously, refuse to answer questions, who's only an obstacle at you getting anywhere. It's like having these surrogates for Trump on TV on these Sunday shows. What is the point? I mean, I understand the value of calling these people to testify.
Of course.
And getting their responses on the record. I think that that's different than having these people on like CNN, for example. But it ends up being the same situation where they just sit there and lie. And then there's no repercussions for that. Well, there's not even a highlighting of what's happening.
That's
the
problem. There's no highlighting that in the moment it's being done. Like when they go on with Dana Bash or Jake Tapper or name another news outlet, Kirsten Welker, if you're not going to push back and highlight the fact that they're liars,
right,
don't have them on. Don't have them come to your committee unless you're going to call it what it is.
Absolutely. So this is what you wanted to get to next, in terms of the escalation that's happening that we're seeing right now every single day with Stephen Miller. I guess, is he the chief of staff right now? Is that his role?
He's the deputy chief of staff. And I think he leads on immigration policy on the domestic side of things.
Yeah, and he's obviously a white power activist. He's a white nationalist. And he... like you said, Jesse, are we going to be getting into the suspending of habeas corpus? You want to talk about what habeas corpus is a little bit?
And let's let him say what he says, and then we'll talk about it.
Well, the Constitution is clear, and that, of course, is the supreme law of the land, that the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus can be suspended in a time of invasion. So I would say that's an option we're actively looking at. Look, a lot of it depends on whether the courts do the right thing or not. At the end of the day, Congress passed a body of law known as the Immigration Nationality Act, which stripped Article III courts, that's the judicial branch of jurisdiction over immigration cases. So Congress actually passed, it's called jurisdiction stripping legislation. It passed a number of laws that say that the Article III courts aren't even allowed to be involved in immigration cases. Many of you probably don't know this. I'll give you a good example. Are you familiar with the term temporary protected status, or TPS, right? So by statute, the courts are stripped of jurisdiction from overruling a presidential determination or a secretarial determination on TPS when the Secretary of Homeland Security makes that determination. So when Secretary Noem terminated TPS for the illegals that Biden flew into the country, when courts stepped in, they were violating explicit language that Congress had enacted, saying they have no jurisdiction. So it's not just the courts aren't just at war with the executive branch. The courts are at war, these radical rogue judges, with the legislative branch as well, too. So all of that will inform the choices the president ultimately makes, yes.
Mr. Miller.
So here's, they're using this language very specifically, very intentionally, talking about invasion, talking about the courts being at war with Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. The Constitution gives the ability to the government to suspend habeas corpus, which I'll get to what it is. In instances of insurrection or invasion. So they're using that language very specifically. Everything else he said is complete bullshit relative to the courts not being able to exercise their authority granted them by the Constitution as a co-equal branch of government. But the definition from Merriam-Webster is of habeas corpus, the right of a prisoner or detainee to obtain a writ of habeas corpus as a protection against legal imprisonment. And the origins of it, the literal meaning of habeas corpus is you should have the body. And this is also from Merriam-Webster. That is, the judge or a court should and must have any person who is being detained brought forward so that the legality of that person's detention can be assessed. And the history of it goes back to 1215. Not 12:15 p.m., the year 12:15 in the Magna Carta, which provided that, quote, no man shall be arrested or imprisoned except by the lawful judgment of his peers and by the law of the land. And habeas corpus's originally, the intent originally was to be an instrument in opposition to a king's, quote, divine right to incarcerate people. Interesting that it was used against kings who wanted to incarcerate people, because Donald Trump wants to be a fucking king. And what happens is he's gotten so many L's, he's taken so many L's from judges that now he's like, well, we'll just circumvent the judges, suspend habeas corpus. And if you want to talk about when it's been done in the past, during actual war, during actual insurrection, during the Civil War, habeas corpus was suspended in like 9 or 11 counties in South Carolina when Union forces were battling against the Ku Klux Klan, and then during Pearl Harbor in World War II. And there was another time in the Philippines when they were like a colony of ours. But this is only done during actual wartime. If you look around and you're bringing your kids to school and you're going to the grocery store, is this a war-torn, invaded country? No. It is only through ridiculous legal arguments that they're going to even assert that they have the right under the Constitution to suspend your right to due process. Because let me tell you, it is about your right. If they can suspend habeas corpus and send away non-citizens when the Fifth Amendment gives us the protection against nor shall any person be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. If they can do it to someone, any person, you're a person, they're going to fuck you too.
Yeah, and this really illustrates why it's so important for Democrats right now to be the opposition party, because things are getting worse with each day that passes.
Yeah, think
and
about
they're testing the limits here in a way that is so severe that, I mean, unless they start actually acting as an opposition party, this is only going to get worse.
Where will we be in 6 months? In a year?
I'm very afraid to think about that.
We're only just past 100 days into a second term. And this is where we are. It is scary to think about where we'll be.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about the headlines, and we're going to transition to a new topic here, and that is Donald Trump trying to enrich himself and using the presidency for his own personal benefit, which we knew he would do, of course. This is his lifelong pattern of behavior. This is who he is.
Well, it's why he wants to be president.
And I guess before we move on to that, we would love to hear from you, 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. We love listener communication. It's an essential part of the show. Please tell us your thoughts. Tell us how you're coping with all this. Tell us what's going on for you. So one story that came out today is that Trump is going to take this luxury plane from Qatar.
From the royal family of Qatar.
I guess he's going to use it as Air Force One.
That's right. And then...
is it bugged to hell, we think?
Well, it's going to have to be retrofitted and fixed and...
It's like a $400 million jet.
$400 million Boeing jumbo jet that then, after he's president, he takes possession of the plane as his personal ownership.
Perfect.
Under the auspices of the Trump Presidential Library. But come on.
He's getting a $400 million gift from a foreign country.
Which is a violation of Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution, the Emoluments Clause, that unless Congress gives express permission for a gift like this, or any gift, it names royalty to take a title of nobility or emoluments or payments or gifts. This is just a fucking grift in broad daylight.
Yes. And in addition to that, Trump also has his crypto grift going, specifically related to his meme coin, and he's planning on attending dinner for investors in his meme coin. And Caroline Levitt was questioned about this by the Bulwark's Andrew Egger.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Caroline. The president posted another ad this week for his Trump meme coin. The group that's running that coin is encouraging people to buy in order to win a dinner this month with the president. Why is the president planning to attend a dinner for the top investors in his coin?
Look, the president is abiding by all conflict of interest laws. The president has been incredibly...
I love this response. Why is he attending this dinner with the investors in his meme coin? Listen, the president is abiding by all laws.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That seems like a weird way to answer that question of why he's attending. Why are you automatically telling us that he's complying with all laws?
Also, you should remember, they're liars. Everything they say is a lie. It's a lie.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an ethical nightmare. It's self-dealing. This is the largest transfer of wealth from foreign governments to a president that this nation has ever seen. Maybe it's never happened until Trump came along. We'll let her finish.
Transparent with his own personal financial obligations throughout the years. The president is a successful businessman, and I think, frankly, it's one of the many reasons that people reelected him back to this office.
There are at least some people who are buying this coin who seem to view it as an opportunity to influence the president's views. There was a logistics company this week that said they would buy $20 million in the coin in order to advocate for free trade between the U.S. and Mexico. If buyers are buying for that reason, are they wasting their money?
Look, I can assure you the president acts with only the interests of the American public in mind, putting our country first and doing what's best for our country, full stop. That's his intention, and that's what he's focused on.
She didn't say no. His question was, are they wasting their money if they're going to invest in the meme coin to advocate for policy that's better for them? They're going to pay the president to advocate for the policy? And then she says, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. Some, an answer to a different question.
Yes. Well, one thing to feel positive about is that a recent crypto bill, the Genius Act, failed in the Senate. And this was a bill that was going to, I guess, establish federal rules for stable coins. Stable coins are one type of cryptocurrency, one type of digital currency that is like tied to other assets, like tied to the dollar. And so this was going to create federal rules for this, but it tanked because there was pushback from Democrats who said, listen, we are going to shut this down because cryptocurrency is one of Trump's grifts, and he's using cryptocurrency to personally enrich himself, and this is a significant problem.
Yeah, he was also against it in his first term because of drug trafficking and blah, 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 until he realized, oh, shit.
Oh, opportunity here.
Well, I can make hundreds of millions of dollars from this. Fuck yeah, I'm for this.
Yeah, now listen.
I'm against TikTok when it hurts me. As soon as it could be a campaign asset, oh my God, I love TikTok. TikTok's for us.
Yeah, now I think it's really important to admit the limits of your knowledge, and cryptocurrency is something that I don't have the bandwidth to learn about this. I don't have it in me to learn about it or even really care about it very much. But in so much as that it affects the current political situation and it's about Donald Trump trying to enrich himself and taking advantage, I do want to know about it. And I think other people are probably in that same situation, even if you don't care about cryptocurrency or know a lot about it. So NBC recently did this report on how this crypto bill didn't advance and what specifically is going on with Donald Trump's attempts to enrich himself using cryptocurrency.
Congress finally trying to regulate the cryptocurrency industry. But as a legislative body that was decades behind the internet and social media, with the average senator now about 65 years old, actually up to the task.
Do you think that members of Congress understand the differences between a meme coin, a staple coin, and a Bitcoin?
That's a great question. I can't speak for other people. I know I've had to spend a lot of time on it myself.
I don't consider myself an expert.
We asked Zach Shapiro, an attorney with the Bitcoin Policy Institute, to explain the differences between the digital assets.
So what I would say is Bitcoin is very much like digital gold. Stable coins are a payments infrastructure. It's an efficient way to move dollars around. Meme coins are somewhere between a joke and a gambling vehicle.
If you think it's confusing, you're not alone. To understand cryptocurrency, you have to go back to the basics. Back in the day, people used items as money, essentially bartering. A cow for a sheep, you get the picture. Eventually, precious metals were traded. And in modern times, state-issued currency like the dollar. Then, a digital revolution.
Bitcoin was invented in 2008 and released in 2009 as sort of the next step in that evolution. It is sort of meant to be a monetary commodity like gold.
But that digital gold had a drawback. Its wild swings in value. Enter the stablecoin.
Stablecoin is a lot easier to follow and understand than crypto. It's just like a Western Union.
But theoretically...
Was that Tommy Tuberville? Are we going to Tommy Tuberville to explain the different types of cryptocurrency? Is that how far we've fallen, Brittany Page?
I guess.
You know, it's fertilization. Yeah, I'm Tommy Tuberville.
With way lower fees. The idea is to peg the stablecoin to the value of a real currency like the U.S. dollar. Tether's value, for example, within a cent of the dollar for the last 5 years. But others, not so much. Like Terra, which wiped out an estimated $50 billion. The founder's fraud trial set to begin next year. He pled not guilty. It's part of why there's a bipartisan push to regulate stablecoins. But a vote to advance the bill failed after Democrats, who originally supported the measure, backtracked, writing the bill needs stronger provisions on anti-money laundering, foreign issuers, and national security. Another big reason for the pause, the president's foray into crypto.
What better way to make yourself favorable to Donald Trump than give him a good business deal on stable coins?
An Abu Dhabi-backed firm announced it will invest $2 billion in the Trump family crypto venture, World Liberty Financial, which recently launched a stable coin. And that's separate from Trump's meme coin. CNBC just reporting this week that 58 crypto wallets have made more than $10 million each, while 764,000 wallets, mostly small holders, have lost money, according to Chain Analysis data. Trump hosting private dinners with his meme coin investors is also raising eyebrows from Democrats and Republicans on the Hill. but he's brushing off concerns.
Is it raising? I'm going to stop the clip there. It's 30 more seconds.
Yeah.
I'm sick of. Is it raising eyebrows with Republicans too? Oh, with Democrats and Republicans. Name the Republicans. Which Republicans? Shut the fuck up. Fucking NBC, man.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we've come to expect from mainstream media. It's why we spend a lot of time talking about these news packages specifically and illustrating the central problems with a lot of this reporting. And it's a bummer because more independent media outlets rely on these networks that have
just
all
like
the
us.
Money and the power and the ability to
the
go
access.
Out and do, yeah, the access. So it's a bummer that they use their power and their abilities for this. But, you know, here we are. So there's an additional aspect of this, which is, and again, I mean, this is just, I mean, how bad is this going to get? But again, now there is a firm from the United Arab Emirates that is going to invest $2 billion in Trump's crypto meme coin. Now, remember that guy who they cited as an expert on crypto? He talked about the meme coin and said it's somewhere between
a joke and gambling.
And a gambling device.
Yeah.
Okay, that's how he described meme coins. He wasn't talking about Trump's meme coin specifically. He just said meme coins themselves are somewhere between a joke and a gambling device. Now, let's hear about this additional Trump corruption.
Donald Trump, no. Baby!
The UAE-backed fund puts all this money in. What do they get back in return? So if it's an effort to buy influence, what are they influencing here? How do we track that as a member of the public?
So it's difficult to say, there's a explicit quid pro quo here. But what we know is that the UAE is depositing $2 billion with the Trump family crypto business. In return, they're receiving this Trump family stablecoin, and then they're using that stablecoin to complete a business transaction. Now, that stablecoin, this new cryptocurrency, it doesn't have any history. It doesn't have any, you know, kind of track record in the crypto world. It's brand new. And so the only reason, you know, theoretically, you would want to use it is because of an association with the Trump brand. And so it's clear that that is a benefit that the Abu Dhabi government gets from using this technology. In terms of what the government gets in return from that, I mean, that kind of explicit quid pro quo is hard to show, at least so far, but the conflict of interest is clearly there.
We know you'll be covering it closely. David Yaffe, thank you so much.
The other thing about this is that Donald Trump, even if the value of the coin goes down, the way I understand this is he's going to be making money off the transactions too. So he's already made upwards of like $100 million, he and his family and his investors, in his joke gambling device coin. And then even here you hear that it's going to be this shell game of buying and then using the coin that you buy as a vehicle to influence it. It's just fucking gross.
Yeah, and I guess, sorry, when I set up that clip, I was going back to the meme coin to talk about it being a joke or gambling device. But in this specific situation with the $2 billion investment, this is the stable coin launched by Donald Trump. So these are two different coins, and the meme coin is the joke and gambling device, but the stable coin is the one, again, that is what was described as an efficient way to move money around, a payment infrastructure. So again, this is just constant with both the authoritarian takeover, the fascism, the constant curtailing of human rights, attack on human rights, and happening at the same time is the constant corruption. And so it's difficult to follow all of this.
Yes.
And one thing that I would note is,
by design,
you know, talking about mainstream media, to get back to that for a moment, there's an Axios reporter named Alex Thompson and Jake Tapper, CNN's Jake Tapper, who are coming out with a book about Biden's cognition.
Oh, and very important. That's really going to move the needle.
And how the media lied and covered up how he was feeble and he, you know, was in trouble cognitively.
He's still out there doing interviews with international press. It's not like he's asleep. And again, he's an 80-something-year-old man. Is he as quick as he was 10 years ago? No! No! Anyway, go ahead.
Well, and again, I think their reporting, which they haven't, they keep promoting their book, the reporting is going to show that it's something more than that. But again, what does it matter at this point? And again, I just spent literally hours watching footage of Donald Trump signing executive orders since January, because we're doing a little thing. and
it'll come out Tuesday.
And I
3 p.m. video Tuesday.
And he's currently in power. He's the one currently in office. He's the one currently constantly attacking human rights. He's currently finding new ways to enrich himself.
And he's the one who has to have every single executive order explained to him by his nursemaid, Will Scharf.
And we're still talking about Biden's cognition. I mean, imagine not reading the room in right. such a severe moment with everything that's happening right now.
You're Alex fucking Thompson and Jake Tapper. Ugh.
Just what? Ugh, God, read the room, fuckers. Yeah. Like, I'm so annoyed by this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so getting...
Hey, fuckers, I'm trying to talk here.
All right.
You're a fucking doctor, bro.
Okay. It doesn't happen very often, so enjoy it. So...
Look at you with your fucking jokes.
Another aspect of this is the constant racism that we're getting from this administration. And one of the latest instances of this is, you know, they keep banning books. And I'm trying to find it.
The Naval Academy, they just banned a bunch of books. They banned a book that was critical of the bell curve.
Right.
But then left the bell curve alone.
Okay, thank you. Yes. So
is that what you were looking for?
Yeah, and the bell curve.
I was just talking to Stahl, but apparently I just landed right on the thing.
Yeah, thank you. And the bell curve, of course, argues that essentially
scientific racism.
Yeah, it's scientific racism that black people are intellectually inferior compared to white people. So you can read the bell curve, but you can't read criticism of the bell curve. That's what Pete Hegseth wants. And we know that racism is the goal. We know that the talk about quote unquote DEI, the explicit goals to remove diversity, equity, and inclusion, that is about excluding people who are not white from positions of power and
erasing the contributions of black people, of LGBTQ people, of women, just erasing the literally deleting photos from government websites that celebrate the contributions of black folks and shit. You
right.
know, goddamn.
And we have another example of this past week where Dr. Carla Hayden, who's the first black person, the first woman to become the Librarian of Congress. And if you have never been to the Library of Congress, it's very beautiful in D.C., and we're going to talk about it in a moment because it's obvious that Caroline Leavitt has never been there. Trump fired the Librarian of Congress, claiming some relation to DEI. Well, let's just hear Caroline Leavitt explain it.
The president. And
question, the president fired the Librarian of Congress. Why did he choose to do that?
We felt she did not fit the needs of the American people. There were quite concerning things that she had done at the Library of Congress in the pursuit of DEI and putting inappropriate books in the library for children. And we don't believe that she was serving the interests of the American taxpayer well. So she has been removed from her position, and the president is well within his rights to do that.
I hadn't heard that. Does she...
She's never been there. She has no idea what it
is. Does she think it's like a community library that you can go and like check out books that are on the shelf? Is that what she thinks?
I have no... Well, this just further proves that they were like phoning through photos of people that they could fire who were black.
Yeah,
Because they have no idea what the Library of Congress is. Do you know how hard it is to get into the Library of Congress? You need to like sign up for a pass in advance.
I've been
trying to go
even as a tourist, it's not just walking in.
No, you can't just walk in.
And then to get into the library part where you can actually do research and they go into the archives and shit, you got to have extra it's not just anybody.
Yeah, they don't lend books to kids or adults. They don't lend books, and it's the largest library. They have over 34 million books and printed materials. So she doesn't know. She doesn't know. She doesn't care. They just found a black woman and they fired her and they said that it's over DEI. Yeah, we know. We know that it's because she's a black woman. Just stop saying DEI. Just say, we found a black woman in a position of power and we wanted to fire her. Because that's what they mean.
They asked a follow-up and this was Caroline Leavitt's response.
She's not a Christian!
See, I knew it was coming that time, and it was not well done.
I really botched it.
Yeah, it was not well done.
I marble-mouthed it. Not great. Not great.
Oh, my God. Okay, so this new thing is happening, too, surrounding Donald Trump keeps talking about dolls and how many like dolls that
you can have.
You're allowed to have
yeah.
or that girls should have. And it's funny that he's choosing dolls. It's about misogyny.
Right. He's not saying talk trucks or dump trucks.
I never thought about it in those terms until I read one of my favorite columnists in The Guardian, Moira Donegan. And she wrote a really beautiful column about how this is related to misogyny. And then I was like, of course it is. How did I not put that together before? But this dolls,
because everything is,
this dolls thing is a talking point that they were very obviously given, because it's not just Donald Trump running his mouth about how many dolls you're allowed to have. Now it is also
a man who, there are literally pictures of Barron on like life-size stuffed animal lions and tigers. He's got his little Mercedes convertible with a personalized license plate that says Barron when he's a toddler. He's just shut the fuck up about what we and our children can have when you are not going to be stifled from giving extravagant gifts to your dopey fucking kids.
Yeah, on that note, I am so enraged thinking about these people who voted for this man,
Yeah.
He's accepting a $400 million gift from a foreign country and
tells you only two dolls.
Yeah, and he's saying that you need rations. He's handing out rations now because of his tariff policy.
Imagine if Joe Biden had sat down with a major news outlet and said, look, things are going to be tough. You don't need to have this many toys. You don't need this. Your kids don't need this many luxuries. They would have lost their motherfucking minds.
Not only that, but now J.D. Vance, vice president, eyeliner, is talking about how Americans need to sacrifice.
Hello, poor.
Oh, my God. Seriously.
So the president said, you know, maybe American kids should have three dolls instead of 30 or whatever the number was. Do you agree? Do you tell the people of this country that you need to make some sacrifices in order to reorganize this bad trade relationship?
Well, I think the president,
I'm going to pause it. God damn it. I wish I would have gotten to the pause button quicker, because I was going to say, make a prediction. Does he say, I think the president means blah, 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 trying to be a Trump interpreter rather than us just listen to our octogenarian president who has a lifetime of communicating and should be an expert. Anyway, I blew it by not pausing earlier.
Its point here is that, yeah, we do need to become more self-reliant, and that's not going to happen overnight, and it's not always going to be easy, Martha. But what I'd ask people is not whether they want $2 or $5 or $20 for their kids. I'd ask American moms and dads, would you like to be able to go into a pharmacy and know that the drugs your kids need are actually available to you as an American parent? Would you like to, God forbid, if your country goes to a war and your son or daughter is sent off to fight, would you like to know that the weapons that they have are good American-made stuff, not made by a foreign adversary? What President Trump is talking about is bringing self-reliance back to the United States economy.
Is Boeing and Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics, are they making our weaponry and arsenal of weapons in foreign countries? No, of course not. You think the F-18, you think the F-22... You think the M1 A2 Abrams is manufactured elsewhere? Fuck off, J.D. Vance, you propagandist.
You know what?
What's going on with me and my marbles?
I think J.D. Vance is right. I think that I think what's going to happen is Americans are going to sit back after the Trump administration has cut Medicaid and cut SNAP in order to pay $4.2 trillion to extend all of the 2017 tax cuts, including at least $2 trillion for people making over $400,000. I think they're going to sit back and they're going to say, you know what? At least these guns were made in America.
That's right.
While their stomachs are growling and they can't afford things that they need because of the tariffs, they're going to sit back and they're going to say, at least the guns that the military is using, they're made with good American quality stuff.
the rules were that you guys weren't going to fact check.
I mean, what is this clown talking about?
I know.
Honestly. And Yeah, I mean, who cares at this point? We can sit around and go, imagine if Joe Biden said this. Imagine if Kamala Harris said this.
I just did do that. What do you mean?
It's like, no, none of it matters. How does none of it matter? How do they see this man accepting a $400 million
gift jet? I hate to break it to the audience.
And it doesn't matter to these people who will never make that in their entire fucking life. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. And
I guess it doesn't matter. This will be the last episode of the show, everybody.
No, that's not a very hopeful thing to say, but this is something that drives me absolutely up the wall. I really struggle to understand how this happened. And I think it's because I was radicalized by being poor so early on. I mean, I really got the message very early on about how hard my mom worked to try to prevent us from, you know, being homeless and to have enough. And I saw that up close and how it wasn't anything about failures. It was just about the hand that you're dealt. And so, like, I just don't get it.
What's it going to take for someone? Why are there so many Republicans and MAGA types who don't mind being told by millionaires and billionaires that they need to sacrifice, the citizens need to sacrifice? No, and they know that Donald Trump's never gonna wonder where his next meal comes from.
Right.
J.D. Vance is never going to worry about paying his mortgage, ever.
Right.
This cabinet is filled with the most wildly wealthy motherfuckers on the planet who are never going to have to sacrifice anything, ever.
Right, and it's filled with, in some cases, ladder pullers like J.D. Vance, who has written a story about coming out of poverty and instead has turned around and pulled up that ladder behind him, which is the worst kind of betrayal. He is a...
class traitor.
Yeah, he's a class traitor, and it disgusts me because he should know better. He claims to know the suffering, and instead of doing something about it, instead of aiding people who are currently still where he used to be, he's turned around and he's betrayed all of them.
Well, listen, he would say, well, just do like I did, but not everybody has a taste for Trump's butthole. You know what I mean?
Well, and again, just do like I did is like telling someone, why don't you have the luck that I had? Right? I mean, not everyone is equipped with the lucky circumstances that allow someone like J.D. Vance to go from what he did to who he is. That can't happen for everyone. It's just same thing with Scott Bessent. I saw him giving his... he was testifying before a committee and they were questioning how he and the Trump administration are always talking about these quote unquote elitists. And whoever was questioning him, I don't remember right now, was saying, where'd you go to school? And, you know, he went to some Ivy League institution and
he put his house on the market in Charleston, South Carolina for $22.5 million.
Right.
His one of his homes.
And they're talking about elitists. You know, give me a fucking break. And so he was really making this great point, whoever was questioning him. And at the end of the questioning, he gets in Scott Bessent. He says, I built my wealth on my own, or I got this on my
own.
Right. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. And the people that are in power that believe that are the ones who are turning around and stripping other people of the resources that they need to survive in a society where the wages are not keeping up with housing prices, you know, and instead of investing and expanding spending in these programs, Trump wants to cut like $40 billion from HUD. I mean, anyway. Yeah,
rather than try to provide someone with some whisper of a bootstrap to pull, they don't even want to do that. They want to take that away from people.
Yeah. So listen, I can keep ranting about this and I don't want to leave the show on like a ranty note, but I guess this is what it's about, right? And we want to know what you're feeling. We want to hear from you. 657-464-7609 or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. Again, listener communication is so, so important. We definitely want to hear from you. So please let us know how you're doing and what you think about all these different stories.
Also, consider helping support this work, helping us produce this show. You can do so for $2 a month. If you're on a fixed income, if you're on disability, if you don't have $2 a month, just share the episode. Just talk about the show to someone else. Help signal boost what we do. But if you do have a couple of bucks you wouldn't mind throwing our way, we would appreciate it. Go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast and help us out there. We love and appreciate you very much. We'll see you next time. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore. and this has been I Doubt It.